The heavens declare the glory of God.
Day after day, they pour forth speech, and night after night, they proclaim knowledge. Their voice carries through all the earth, their words to the ends of the world. These are some of the phrases from the beginning of the psalm that Joyce just read to us, and they're filled with beautiful imagery of God speaking wisdom to us through creation, speaking instruction to anyone who will dare to listen. So on Friday afternoon, while I worked on this sermon, as the wind howled and the snow fell heavily on the streets, I found myself feeling inundated with the glory and the wisdom of God, as if every snowflake was speaking truth straight to my ears. Okay, you got me. That's literally the opposite of what happened. I sat in my living room in the dark because the power was out, Bible open, laptop open, and my head filled with distractions. I sat there as the sirens howled outside from fire trucks going to put out fires from electric surges in people's houses. I sat there wondering about my friend and worrying about her. She had been to my house to visit that morning because we thought that there wasn't any snow coming, and she brought her 9-month-old baby with her. So I sat there worrying about them, who had just tried to leave to get back to Phoenixville from Telford in the snow. I worried about Pat, who was stuck in standstill traffic on the way home from work, just hoping that he would be able to make it home safely or make it home at all. I kept glancing at my phone battery, realizing that it was running out and that I had no electricity to charge my phone to be able to reach Pat or anyone else. Knowing that we also didn't have any other form of communication, and hoping that eventually the electricity would come back on. And then I would glance back at my open Bible and my nearly fully charged laptop and think, okay, what's this sermon supposed to be about again? The heavens declare the glory of God, right? Well, they were declaring something. But at the moment, it felt like what they were declaring was that people would be stranded in the snow, the electricity would be out, and if there was anything divine in that declaration, I was totally missing it. I was too distracted to notice. Isn't that so often the case? Those moments in life when we feel like we're in the greatest need of centeredness and wisdom and peace are the moments when it seems the hardest to come by. We get distracted, and sometimes rightly so, by all the things that are going on around us, and it's just impossible to hear whatever it is that the heavens are supposed to be declaring, and that wisdom of God that's supposed to be in our reach seems so far away. The writer of this psalm that we read this morning, I think, is trying to remind us that God is closer than we think, and that if we just take the time to stop and notice and be still, we can find that divine wisdom, divine guidance, and divine instruction all around us. God speaks to us through creation, and through the words and instructions that God has given to us. So, like many other passages that I happen to have preached on this year, this particular psalm was another one that I had to memorize during my childhood. And I remember really enjoying the first part of this psalm that talked about God's goodness being proclaimed by the heavens through all of creation. But the second half of the psalm didn't really connect with me as much. In fact, it almost made me feel guilty. In the second half, in the NIV version, the psalm is translated in a way that it makes it sound like it's all about God's laws and commandments. So as a child, I got the message that I was supposed to just relish in these rules and laws and not be a sinner because God really loved the people who got things right. and followed the rules. Not really the people who didn't. Even in my Jewish study Bible, the words say things like, the teaching of the Lord is perfect, renewing life. The decrees of the Lord are enduring. The precepts of the Lord are just. The fear of the Lord is pure. The judgments of the Lord are true. And this interpretation of the text that I had in my head that was all about following these commandments was probably heavily influenced by the theology I was learning in Christian school and at my church. But as I read the text again this week, I realized that my original understanding probably wasn't the most true to the text. If you go back and you look at the original Hebrew for this psalm, the word for instruction and teaching and commands and laws is just Torah. The Torah is the holy book of the Jewish people that is read during worship in the synagogue, and it includes the first five books of the Hebrew Bible. So Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Those are the books we find also at the beginning of our Old Testament. So when the psalmist is speaking about the joy and life that is found in God's law and God's instruction, the psalmist is not actually specifically referring to the Ten Commandments or any set of specific rules. It's most likely that the psalmist is referring to these five books of the Bible. Now, often in Jewish literature, the Torah is described as something that gives people life, that gives people blessings and wisdom. It was believed that if one followed the teachings of the Lord, that things would go well for you. In Proverbs 8, the wisdom that can be accessed through the Torah is personified as a woman who is crying out to the people in the streets and calling them to turn away from destructive behaviors. She, wisdom, is described as being better than great wealth or jewels. All who find her find life and find favor with the Lord. In the same way, in Psalm 19, we see that the judgments and the instructions of the Lord are being described as more desirable than gold and sweeter than honey from the comb. The comparison to gold and honey might seem like nice poetic language to us. Perhaps the language that Joyce used in the Message version that she read this morning of strawberries and emeralds resonated more with us. And as I was thinking about the language of honey and gold, I thought back to some of what we talked about in my Hebrew Bible classes this fall about how honey was the ultimate treat for people living in ancient Israel. Honey was all they had for sweetness other than dates or fruit. There was no sugar, no hot fudge sundaes, no cinnamon buns. Honey was it. It was one of the only sources of sweetness that people had to access. So to compare God's instruction or the Torah to honey was to declare it to be incredibly desirable and wonderful in almost this amazing, inaccessible sort of way. It's rare. It's good. It's clear from the psalmist's words that there's almost something sensual about this attraction to God's instruction, this connection between humanity and wisdom from God. There's something palpable, something that's not to be missed out on. Perhaps for us today, a better analogy is to compare God's word to winning the lottery or having the ooeyest, gooeyest hot fudge brownie that you can imagine. I don't know about you, but I have a hard time remembering the last time that I was that desperate or excited for instruction from the Lord. And I think, you know, sometimes for those of us who grew up with a very legalistic idea about what God's instructions were, we kind of have a visceral reaction to this idea of God's laws and instructions, even if that does broadly mean the whole Torah, including stories and narratives and other ways that God connects with us. Thinking about God's laws reminds us of forms of legalism that may have caused a lot of pain and hurt and isolation in our lives. But I don't think that these forms of legalism are what God is about. And I don't think that that's what this psalm is intended to be about either. One of the other things we've been talking about in my classes this semester is how the Christian tradition gives the Jewish tradition, unintentionally, a pretty bad rap when it comes to our theology and the way that we understand the Bible. Because so much of our Christian theology is built on this idea that Jesus came to free us from legalism of the law that the Jews followed, and that the laws that we read in the Old Testament are completely negative in comparison to everything that happens in the New Testament. But I don't think we really completely understand what the law and the Torah meant to the Jewish people. Now, I don't claim to be an expert. I'm just trying to share with you some of the insights that I've been learning. But what I understand is that this law was not a requirement of what the Jews had to do and had to follow in order to remain in covenant relationship with God. Rather, it was a gift to guide them and a gift to be a sign that they were God's chosen people. And if we think about it, the covenant that was made, that started with Abraham, Abraham didn't have law, right? The Torah wasn't written until later. Abraham didn't have the Ten Commandments, but Abraham was still in covenant relationship with God, and that's where the Jewish people trace that covenant back to. So when the law was given, it was there in the Torah to help them and guide them on their journey, to distinguish them as God's people in the world. The stories and guidelines weren't just about telling them what to do. They were there to help form their identity, help them remember that they were special to God. Now, there were a lot of times that it would have been really difficult for the Jewish people to remember that they were special. They had to go through some very extreme difficulties, like when they were overtaken by the Assyrian Empire, when they were in exile in Babylon, when they were under the thumb of Roman rule during the time of Jesus. But during all of those times when they felt maybe isolated and separated from God, they could look back to the stories and lessons of God's faithfulness in the Torah to remind them that they weren't alone. When their rulers were treating them unjustly, they could look back to the lists of commandments to remember that God cares about injustice. Maybe the laws even reminded them that they were called to a higher standard of justice than what they saw being done by some of their neighbors and by the empires around them. And even when they didn't have the literal stories written out in front of them to look at, they had in their memories the stories they'd been told. And they had creation. They could look to the heavens that were said to declare the glory of God, which was being displayed and reminding them that they were not alone. To me, this gives this psalm a completely different spin. The teaching of the Lord is perfect, renewing life. The decrees of the Lord are enduring, making the simple wise. The precepts of the Lord are just, making the heart rejoice. The instruction of the Lord is lucid, making the eyes light up. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether, not like the judgments of people in this world. They're more desirable than gold, than much fine gold, sweeter than honey, than drippings of the comb, than hot fudge sundaes, and amazing pies.
going back to the words of God, to the stories, to the instructions, to those things that reminded the people of who they were and who they belonged to, was what helped them endure through difficult times. And we face difficult times too. So in those times, where do we connect with God? When times are normal and boring, when do we connect with God? When times are good, when do we connect with God? Where do we hear those honey sweet words of teaching and gentle guidance, of loving instruction, of identity forming stories, of nurturing and guiding like a mother guides her young baby? Where do we access that? Perhaps for some of us, it is the stories in the Bible that formed us in our youth. Maybe when we hear them, it reminds us of the small part that we play in God's unfolding story. Maybe for others of us, it's the voice of God that speaks to us through the stars, through the rustling leaves on the trees, and yes, even the howling of the wind and the snow. Can we hear it? Do we seek it? God is speaking constantly. Wisdom is calling out to us through the chaos of our lives when we feel overwhelmed by the empire or we can't hear God speak above the noise. That voice is still there calling us, reminding us who we are and who we belong to. Sometimes we just need a reminder to stop and listen, even when the world is spinning all around us and sitting still and focusing seems completely impossible. So, like I said at the beginning of the sermon, the wind was howling all around me while I prepared this on Friday. And even though at first I wasn't sure I would get any inspiration, and even though I was distracted by the storm, the lack of electricity, worry about my friends and family and people out there on the roads, somehow through all of that, it came together. And inspiration came through the whistling winds and the tinkling wind chimes and the revving engines of plows and salt trucks. And my loved ones got home safely. Pat got home before dark. My friend and her baby found shelter on the way home, even though they didn't make it all the way there. They ended up stopping at a random house of strangers that ended up to not be strangers, and actually people who were related to someone we used to go to church with. So we all made it through. And God spoke, even in the chaos of the world. That wisdom never stopped calling out to us, whether that was wisdom to pull over into a random driveway or wisdom for words on the page. All we needed to do was to stop long enough to listen. So, in closing the sermon this morning, I want to allow some time for us to listen together in silence for the wisdom and the voice of God that is calling out to us, whether it's telling us to take a break, to remind us of who we are, or even just let us be still. So let's take some time to listen together this morning.